Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting dodo birds. Leaky Black, Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent. And don't forget, while you're here, to also subscribe to the college CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel if you haven't done that already. Let's get into it. And then there was one. You might remember, Norlander, you might remember, you were here right before the start of the season. I was just sitting here with you, and you started a conversation. I didn't know we were talking about this. You started a conversation about how it might be more difficult than ever this season to try to predict who would be college basketball's last undefeated team. I objected to the premise. I didn't think it would be that difficult. And then I made a prediction. Hey, rather than hear me retell the story, let's just watch the original version. Let's enjoy it together. Let's take a trip down memory lane.
Okay.
Six. All right, last undefeated team. Oh, buddy, I went and looked at the schedules of every team ranked in the preseason AP Top 25. This feels harder to forecast than ever before.
Nope, I've got it.
Okay, give me, because I got two candidates, and trust me, they are quasi off the board, but give me your team and what date it's going to lose. Last unbeaten in the entire country.
I did not remember who I said for this last season.
It was Houston, and you made it to 9-0. Again, I picked TCU. They did not get to game four.
I'm going to Houston again.
Put your ones up. Put your ones up like you're a tribal chief.
Okay. I assume that's a professional wrestler, by the way.
That's the professional wrestler. That's
the professional wrestler.
That's the universal champion for more than 1,000 days, dead leg.
Yeah, no shot. I know who that is.
That's your tribal chief.
Okay, we have just set a podcast record. First of all, you know what? Shouts to you. Did a little back-end production. You pulled a me. You dropped something I didn't know was coming here, which is great, which I love to see. However, that is a record, by the way, for Parrish going with a look at me, Louie, less than 90 seconds into a show. Congratulations, you were right.
Buddy, when you started this whole thing, and by you, I mean me, by talking about Florida Atlantic's top five team in the country, you got to celebrate what you can celebrate.
That's true. We will get to your FAU prediction.
We might not. Show, I might be done talking about FAU.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. It cuts both ways on this one. However, congratulations on that because, of course, as many people realize here by Sunday night, we lost Ole Miss, which was no shock whatsoever. Ole Miss got absolutely destroyed by Tennessee. And then James Madison got bumped from the ranks of the unbeatens over the weekend as well. Houston was the only one left without a scratch.
I see somebody in the chat saying GP looks healthy and energetic now. I am feeling much better than I felt last Friday. Right below me, my wife is in bed with COVID. It's rough over here, man.
Gosh. So, admittedly, I did not watch or listen to the show. Was it a struggle bus situation on Friday's show?
It was rough. I was having trouble getting through it. There was a time on Thursday night where I was like, I feel so bad. I don't know if I can do this. And then I was like, I'm just going to have to do it. But the weekend was rough. I felt really bad Friday, really bad Saturday. I'm feeling much better today. But as soon as I got home, actually, like when I landed, as I'm walking from my gate to baggage claim, I get a text from my wife. It's a positive COVID test. So we're struggling over here. But you know who's not struggling? Your Houston Cougars.
Yes.
COVID can't get them. 14-0 with four quadrant one wins. They are the last undefeated team in the country. In that clip we showed, you did ask me for the last undefeated team and the date they would finally lose. I did say that later in the clip. I just didn't want to run 5 minutes of old show. As much as I would have enjoyed it, I was scared nobody else would. But I did predict that Houston would be 14-0 at this point, 15-0 with a win at Iowa State, and then 15-1 after a game at TCU. I had their first loss coming this upcoming weekend at TCU. So now I don't know whether to root for it or not.
I mean, that's up to you. But at this point, you've gotten it past the finish line, and we have an undefeated team still heading into the second weekend of the month. That's a good thing. Reminder, Houston has ranked number one in multiple advanced metrics of the mainstream variety for a month, and in some cases a month plus at this point. So from a predictive standpoint, this is not a surprise. Nonetheless, congratulations again to Kelvin Sampson. They've only played one Big 12.
Let's keep the congratulations headed my way.
I'm going to actually congratulate the coach and players responsible.
No.
Okay.
No. Yes. That seems unfair. I don't feel like I'm getting enough credit for this.
I gave you credit off the top. This is not a Chris Holtmann situation, and we're not veering toward Chris Holtmann territory. It's just not going to happen there. I'm going to point out the fact that Houston right now has won 14 games in a row, 1-0 in the Big 12, although it did get let's be honest here. It was West Virginia at home, and it's not a good team. So that's the opener. Now it's got to play its next two on the road. We'll see if it can get the job done there. But by virtue of getting to this point on the calendar without a scratch and having defeated the likes of Utah, Dayton, both those teams could very well play themselves into the NCAA tournament. We'll see. Have a road win at Xavier, which is not nothing by any means. And they also have one over Texas A&M. I will get to the Aggies before we get out of this episode here. It is a decent schedule. It is not, in my opinion, one of the 10 best schedules to this point in the country by any means from a high major standpoint, but whatever, man. You get to January 8th and you still haven't lost a game. Big time credit there. And it sets the table for what will be one of the 3 to 5 biggest storylines in that league this season, which is Houston's been awesome the past half decade. Now, as it makes the transition officially into the Big 12, will it find itself in the next 2 months where it has been, you know, every year as of late, and that is at the top of the league ledger? Obviously, it's a big step up, but so far, so good.
You're very kind to Houston's schedule because not only is it not one of the top 10, according to the net, it's not one of the top 172.
I was going high major, so I'm not sure where it stands. That would be obviously be the entire sport there. So yeah, I don't think it's an awful schedule.
But that's the immediate pushback. And honestly, like, we're goofing around. I don't have much else to say about Houston because it was just another big blowout win over a bad team. There's more important things that happened this weekend. But the one thing I will say is that when I tweet this Saturday night, much of the pushback, to the extent there's any pushback, the pushback is like, I literally read this. Somebody saying my high school team could have gone undefeated against that schedule, or anybody could go, any good team, not great, any good team could go undefeated against that schedule. And that is wildly misguided. I mean, again, it's not the toughest schedule in the country. It's not one of the top 172 according to the net, but it is a 14-0 record featuring four quadrant one wins. Those quad one wins, you went through them. Dayton on a neutral, Utah on a neutral, Xavier on the road, Texas A&M on a neutral. Dayton, Utah, Texas A&M are all top 40 in the net, top 35 at KenPom. So I'm sorry, none of them currently have a number next to their name in the AP poll, but those are, you know, top 35, top 40 teams. The idea that Houston's played nobody, it isn't true, even if the schedule strength isn't great. The idea that anybody could go, not only do I roll my eyes at the idea anybody, because that's obviously not true, anybody could go undefeated against the schedule. I would make the other argument to the other extreme. Who else could have gone undefeated against the schedule?
The list would be short, to be honest, especially in the context of this particular season where let's, I guess, wait another few more weeks, GP, before we really arrive there. But we're at a moment here where it's seeming like there's a lot of good teams at the top. But I don't know if we have a team. I think there could be an elite team that emerges. But at this point, a lot of teams have either stepped in it or showed that they have weaknesses, and those have been exploited. Not just like on a random one-off night. That's really Purdue at this point. There's even other high-level teams where they've been picked off. So to answer your question, yeah. I'm sure there might be three or five that could, and you could probably pull up the data and scrape the data and say, actually, you know, when you look at this team versus the schedule, you know, the probability is pretty decent. But I probably trust Houston more than any other team because, frankly, it's been doing this against this level of opponent for so long that it's exceeded expectations in terms of how good it is, no matter who it's playing. To be honest.
How about this? If you took the top 10 teams in the country right now and allowed them, like just in this hypothetical world, to go play Houston's first 14 games, I would bet against every one of them going 14-0.
That's a good call.
And I, you know what? Purdue might burn me. UConn might burn me. You know, but I'd win money. I'd win money by betting against all 10. So I ran through it just sort of to crystallize the point. I'll be quick with it. Number one team in the country is Purdue. They got a loss to Northwestern. Northwestern 67th at KenPom. Northwestern also lost to Chicago State. Houston has four wins over teams ranked higher than the team that beat the team that is ranked number one and favored to win the national title right now. That suggests even Purdue would have a hard time being undefeated against Houston's schedule. Number two, Kansas, lost by 14 to a Marquette team that is now 2-2 in the Big East. You sure they'd be undefeated against this schedule? Number four, UConn, lost to a Seton Hall team that's 66th at KenPom. That's lower than four teams that Houston has beaten. Number five, Tennessee. This is where it gets interesting. Tennessee, no bad losses.
Yeah.
You could actually point to Tennessee and make the argument if you wanted to that the Vols would have or could have gone undefeated against this schedule because their only losses are Purdue, Kansas on neutrals at North Carolina. They got wins over Wisconsin, Illinois, Ole Miss, NC State. So a Vol fan, I'll give Vol fans a pass. If they want to say we'd be undefeated against the Houston schedule, I'll at least listen to that. But then we get the number six, Kentucky. You lost to Wilmington. Be quiet. Number seven, Marquette.
At home.
You've lost to two sub-40 KenPom teams. Quiet down. The only team we know that would go undefeated against Houston's first 14 games is Houston. Again, I'll let Tennessee fans make the claim if they want. Everybody else, you need to STFU.
All right, there we go. There we have it. To me, Houston getting undefeated and being the only one, that's one of the bigger headlines of the weekend. But GP, I feel like the game that went down on CBS on Saturday with another Big 12 team is worthy of a little bit of discussion.
This is America's most watched network, the network of stars. Kansas won again while struggling again. Beat TCU 83-81, but not without controversy. We'll discuss the Jayhawks and that final minute next. First, though, a word from our partners.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Kansas won again this weekend, struggled again this weekend, beat TCU 83-81. It was controversial. Let me set the scene for you, then we'll discuss it. So there's basically a minute left. TCU is up 79-77. Kansas has the ball. Kevin McCullough tries to feed Hunter Dickinson. Ernest Uday, a former Jayhawk, by the way, appears to get a steal. TCU is out in transition, 5-on-4, because Hunter Dickinson is lying down on the court after being struck, seemingly inadvertently, by Uday in the head. Whistle blows. Transition opportunity is over. Officials review it. They call it a flagrant one. So instead of TCU being on a 5-on-4 break with a 2-point lead in the final minute, Kansas gets two free throws and the ball with 57 seconds remaining. Hunter Dickinson makes both free throws. Tie game. DeJuan Harris gets a bucket. KU up 81-79. 43 ticks left. On the other end, Micah Peavy, offensive rebound putback, ties the score 81. So now Kansas has the ball, tie game, shot clock off. Dwan Harris gets it to Hunter Dickinson, catches it deep, easy bucket, also controversial. Kansas has the lead. Jameer Nelson Jr. misses a jumper at the buzzer, and that was that. Deadleg, what'd you make of the final minute, Kansas-TCU? Should TCU fans, I know they are upset, should they legitimately be upset?
I mean, you are entitled to be upset if you're a TCU fan. I get it. I'm not up in arms over the call, to be honest. The irony with all of this is that Uday, as you mentioned, former Kansas player, he is not at Kansas because Hunter Dickinson went to Kansas. So the fact that he winds up playing a critical role, albeit arguably unintentional role with this, and enabling a window to be opened for Kansas to take the game. To Big 12 fans that are familiar with this, this is obviously nothing new. I don't hate the call. It is a go either way, close to 50-51 for me. I can easily understand if you're a TCU fan. Plus, you're in that building. TCU's had a decent start so far, but it doesn't have a resume win yet this season. So you had one, you were hanging around, and they couldn't pull it out despite playing them close. There, Kansas has won. I mean, the amount of games that Kansas has won in the Big 12 at home, you know, where it's been down to a possession in the final minute, but they seem to pull it out, speaks to the year-over-year reliability to Bill Self as a coach and that roster. People that don't like Kansas are obviously going to push back against that pretty hard and say, you know, it's always 8-on-5 in that building. I get it. Kansas fans are at the very top of the list, and I say this endearingly and lovingly because I find it... I find it so entertaining. I don't think there is a fan base in America that is more offended by the notion of an official calling a foul on their home team than the Kansas fans. And that is every home arena does this. There is no fan base that takes it more personally than KU. And because of that, Kansas and that team, they rally around this, and that building is among the very best, if not the best, in the entire sport. I didn't have a huge issue with the call, and that bucket that Dickinson hit to win it, that's, you know, on the very short list of reasons why Kansas needed to get Dickinson on its roster this season, was plays like that. And I don't know if, you know, I wasn't following along in real time with this on social media or anything like that. I don't know if people thought maybe that Dickinson might have even pushed up to get some space and there should have been a call there again. But you're in the fog. What are you going to do? TCU put up a big battle and a good fight, but KU gets the win and is we'll see down the road on Kansas and if it's able to establish itself as the true alpha in this league with the likes of Houston and all these others, GP, because I think even some KU fans would admit that to this point, it's getting the wins as it should, but there have been a couple of instances here where it has escaped and, you know, in close to 50-50 kind of matchups. So that was kind of my takeaway on the game.
Just to double down on something you said, I was down in Fort Lauderdale, CBS Sports HQ studios. First time I've been down there in a while, by the way.
Yeah.
They're great.
Didn't even recognize the building when you walked in, kind of deal.
That studio's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Green room's very great.
Similar to the Stanford one up here.
Yeah, No, it looks sharp. I was real impressed. So it was nice to be down there, but I was on set with Jeremy St. Louis, and we're coming right off of this game live. And he was like, just your thoughts on the final minute. I said, I feel like I've watched that final minute of a Kansas game inside Allen Fieldhouse 100 times.
Yeah.
Like, tight game against an inferior opponent. Controversial call, but it goes your way. Then Dwan Harris makes a bucket. Game's over. Like, you know, they just felt like I've watched that. I know I haven't seen it 100 times. It felt like I'd seen it 100 times. As for how it went down, I'll just say this. Gene Steratore is the CBS Sports officiating expert, right?
Yeah.
He said it should not have been a flagrant. Immediately. He looked at it. They went to him. He said, I don't see it. It should not. This is in the middle of the review.
Yeah.
He basically predicting they're going to look at this. They ain't going to see what they need to see. We're just going to keep playing. So he was surprised that the officials actually did call it a flagrant one. Meantime, we go back to the studio in New York, CBS Broadcast Center. Jay Wright and Seth Davis, they both disagree with Gene and said it should have been a flagrant one. So for our purposes, I don't think I have much interest in like debating whether the call was technically correct or not relative to the rule book, because if Gene and Jay and Seth can't agree, I don't imagine there's much anything we're going to be able to say.
There might not be hope for the world if that's the case.
I'm just saying this seems like the type of thing where people have already made their minds up, right? And there ain't nothing I'm going to be able to say to change anybody. Like, I could talk to Seth Davis about this for the next hour. I would not change his mind, all right? So I don't think we're changing anybody's mind. I guess the main thing I would say is that regardless of whether it was a correct call relative to the rule book or not, it felt wrong.
It felt
emphasis
wrong.
On the word felt. It felt wrong to have a game decided that way because it really did flip the game. Like, if TCU is up two and out in transition, 5-on-4 break in the final minute, you just pause it right there and do the whole win probability thing, they're probably going to win that game. But by the time TCU got the ball back, TCU was down two and basically on the wrong side of a 2-for-1 situation because Kansas got to go down and take 2-for-1. So that stinks. I hated the call. Even if it was technically right, and I'm not certain that it was. Simply put, if a game can be determined with a flagrant one connected to what we all watched on Saturday afternoon, we have a rule book problem. What Ernest Udeh did in that moment should not flip a game against TCU. That's the part that felt wrong. So if Gene Steratore is right, and it should not have been a flagrant one relative to the rule book, then shame on the refs. But if Jay and Seth were right, that it should have been a flagrant one relative to the rule book, then we need to change the rule book. Because I just sitting and I saw Kansas fans, even some of them, tweeting this on Saturday. I feel bad about that. Like, I'm glad we won. I'll take it. I'm trying to win another Big 12 title. But that didn't feel right. That didn't feel right to me. I don't care what the rule is. I mean, obviously, I do care what the rule is. But it's just when you watch that and you go, did that feel right? Should that really have decided that game? I didn't think so.
There's a lot of, there's a lot of gray area, in my opinion, when it comes to flagrant run interpretation. You get some of this as an analog is in college football with the targeting rule. And this has been something that has obviously caused plenty of uproar in that sport. Hopefully it doesn't rear its head, pun intended there, on Monday night in the national championship game. We'll pick that before the show's out here. But when it comes to the flow of the game, the way that it was playing out, particularly with how Udeh was playing and how that play played out, I wouldn't disagree with you on that, GP. You just don't want to have a game marred by that. Now, sometimes it's just inevitable. It's going to happen. But I wish there was a bit more decisiveness in the language when it comes to some of these flagrant ones. I mean, I wrote about it last week in the court report. There are multiple flagrant one interpretations for coaches being outside the coaching box, and it is a little bit of an irony. And a couple of people found me and said that there were genuinely happy to hear this was the case. A couple of officials were like keeping coaches in check and being like, get in the box. So it was kind of cool to see that the article actually seemed to have a little bit of impact there. But it is ironic that that kind of flagrant one warning, even warning first and a flagrant one, has not been called for years and years and years. And yet a play like this can, I don't want to say it flipped the game, because there's no telling that TCU would have won the game if it doesn't get called. You just don't want to see it happen there. So I don't disagree with you on terms of how it felt in the moment there. And the rule probably needs a little bit more clarity here. You get this every so often, every few times a season, Parrish, where you get a flagrant one. And when you watch the play, you just don't feel like the player was doing it consciously or with enough intent to raise it to that level.
That's exactly right. I know the rule about, arm to head. I got you. Mm-hmm. I don't believe Ernest Udeh did that on purpose. All right. I don't believe he tried to hit Hunter Dickinson. And then Hunter played it up intelligently. Like, he laid on the ground. They stopped the play, but he wasn't really hurt. Certainly not hurt enough to where he couldn't continue. Evidence mm-hmm. being that he did continue. You say the rule needs, what's the word you used?
A clarification or updated change.
Maybe I would actually, rather than being just black and white, because I think this is what the problem with the rule as it is currently constructed. It's even though Gene and Seth and Jay can disagree on it, it's supposed to be clear. Did this hat look at it? Did you see this? If you saw this, it's a flagrant one, right? Yeah. I would actually like to leave it up to the officials a little bit more. Like, let them talk about it. Let them provide context. Major League Baseball does this. I was trying earlier to think of something from another sport that is, and it might be apples to oranges, but I think you'll get the point. In Major League Baseball, do you realize you can hit a batter in the head with a fastball 97 miles per hour? and be punished in no way whatsoever.
Yeah.
They'll just let you throw the next pitch. They'll take that guy to the hospital and you throw the next pitch. On the other hand, you can also throw a fastball 3 feet over somebody's head. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even hit them and they'll throw you out of the game. Mm-hmm. It's all left up to the ump. It's at his discretion. All right, this is just a ball that got away from this guy. It meant nothing. It's just a bad pitch. He's going to stay in the game. All right, this guy just homered off this guy 2 innings ago. Now he's back up, and first pitch, he threw it over his head. You got to go. Noah Syndergaard got thrown out of a World NLCS game 2015 for the Mets. Didn't hit anybody. Just threw a ball over somebody's head that connected some stuff from a previous game, and the ump said, you can't do that. You're gone. I didn't hit anybody. Doesn't matter. You're gone. Because the umps knew what he was doing. I would like officials to have a little more leeway here to be able to huddle, look at it, and go, okay, the way that rule used to be written, this would maybe be a flagrant one. But come on, man. These dudes been playing for 39 minutes. Why don't we just let them figure this out and not, maybe not decide the game with this call, but you certainly flip the odds in a dramatic way.
Yeah.
TCU goes from being up 2 with the ball in transition to down 2 with the ball. You flip the game. Yeah. You at least took a likely winner and made him a likely loser. You took a likely loser and made him a likely winner. Mm-hmm. I would like officials to be able to provide that context in their huddle and say, guys, we'll talk about this more later, but we are not making this call right now because it will be a terrible way to end this game.
Yep, I agree. And, you know, play so many damn games in a year, you're going to have these instances pop every now and then. Of all the times, of all the teams, it just happened to be Kansas in that building, which just, you know, fuels the fire for opposing fan bases that have been on the wrong end of not that exact kind of scenario, but you get the point.
All right. So that's what happened with Houston in the Big 12, with Kansas in the Big 12. We'll skip around some other interesting developments from the weekend next, but first, let's get one more word from our partners.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right, if you're a regular listener to Sunday night episode of the Island College Basketball Podcast, you know Norlander usually handles the weekend rip around. But this weekend, he took some nice time with, it was with your family, was it? Or was it not with your family?
No, I was.
You left your family. Okay. I was going to say he got some nice quality family time.
But
he just decided to hang out with his friends. So,
Vermont native, got up there. I do one getaway ski weekend every January.
Explain it to your wife and your kids.
I don't need to. They were all for it, and we're going to do another one later this year. In fact, I went into a spot. I was with a buddy that that had not, we went up to Killington and we went to one of these bars. And I said, he didn't realize I did a podcast and all this stuff. And I was like, no, yeah, I did. In fact, it was at that table about 10 years ago that I literally edited and uploaded an episode of the podcast. So, fortunately, didn't have to do that this time around, but it was a good time on the slopes. But that means that you got to build the Sunday whip around.
So let's start with this. Yes. Mick Cronin skipped his press conference after UCLA fell to 6-9 with a 66-57 loss at home to Cal.
Yikes, man.
UCLA has now lost 7 of 9. These dudes went from playing Marquette and Gonzaga tight early to losing to everybody. Now they can't beat anybody. And Bill Plaschke, the longtime LA-based columnist, like, I thought it was a fair but harsh column. Like, he let him have it pretty good. What do you make of everything that's happening at UCLA right now? Mick has gone from publicly, like, I don't know that he says anything that coaches don't say privately sometimes, but like, coaches don't usually say this kind of stuff publicly. He said, hey, listen, I'd love to have better players, but we didn't have the money to buy them. He criticized last week his players' intelligence and more or less threatened, like, hey, if your performance doesn't improve, you won't have this opportunity anymore. These opportunities don't last forever. So like, it's spiraling there. Obviously, it's not something he can't get back under control, but UCLA is 176th in the net right now. That's wild.
It is absolutely spiraling on a man who has not been in this kind of situation for well over a decade. Ever since he got to UCLA, he has coached an NCAA tournament squad. Even in 2020, when we didn't have one, UCLA was a projected tournament team in his first year there, then Final Four, back-to-back Sweet 16s the past two seasons, with UCLA being a 2-seed a year ago, and they were a 4-seed before that. He's entitled, frankly, to having just an absolute bagel of a year, and maybe that's what this is going to be. But he is just burning down a ton of stuff on the way to doing this, and I don't quite get it. And sorry, Mick, no excuse. You don't skip the press conference. Absolute amateur hour stuff. You deserve to be called out for it. You're the head coach. You take it. I don't care. Unless there was a truly health-related reason or emergency that would force you to miss a postgame press conference, there's never an excuse for a head coach of a program not to attend a postgame press conference.
I will tell you, the publicly stated explanation, I don't want to call it an excuse because that implies negative stuff, explanation was that he was still talking to his team and didn't want to keep the media waiting. But as Plaschke points out in his column, the media, under circumstances like this, is always happy to wait however long they have to wait.
We have sat, yeah, and you probably more than me, frankly, but it's happened with the Everett. We have sometimes sat and waited for a losing coach north of 45 minutes. And it's annoying in the moment as someone in the media because you want to get the quotes, and it's just, you know, it's quote gathering and scene gathering and all that kind of stuff. And some coaches, I think, over the years maybe have taken a little bit of sick delight and knowing that the media is sitting there waiting and be like, oh, they'll wait for an hour. That does happen, but it doesn't matter, man. Show up to the press conference, Mick. Not acceptable. Sorry, dude. You got to be at the presser. You're having a bad season. You have gone after your players here and there. Hey, I'm all for coaches being on the record and criticizing their team if it's valid. And, you know, in many cases, these are grown men. And in some cases, they are grown men on their way to making a paycheck professionally to play basketball at the next level after college there. But you get the attention of Plaschke. That's going to make a lot of noise in that town, as it should. Cronin, again, I'm going to repeat this. He's got the bandwidth, the slack, the leash, however you want to put this, to have a stinker of a year. And this is what that is. UCLA is terrible, man. They are not good. You lose to Cal like that, awful. Show up to the press conference, and a lot of this stuff falls on you as the head coach. I think he knows that. He doesn't seem to be taking quite enough accountability for it. I think you've got a couple thoughts on that. But that's my, you know, takeaway after hearing what he did over the weekend. Super soft move from him. I would hope he doesn't do it again.
Yeah, I obviously think he should have been at the press conference too. I'm just always hesitant to start complaining about how coaches treat the press, because my experience is that fans don't seem to care. Like, you don't win over many fans when
it's not even how you're treating the press. Like, you're not even getting there and showing up for the UCLA fans that care about this. Like, you're actually shortchanging them. So that's the press.
I agree with you.
Accountable for that. And I think you know that, but I'm just adding.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think he should have been there. And yeah, I should have said that differently. It's not just you should be there to tell your fan, to talk to your fans through the press. And, you know, there's a reason why every other coach in the country shows up every time, right? Or at least most times. And So I thought that was a bad look, but again, that's not the type of thing that fans tend to care about. I wasn't taking issue with your point as much as just it doesn't play with fans the way it plays with media. You say that he has done enough to earn the opportunity to have a terrible year, and I agree with you. Like, I still think Mick Cronin is one of the best coaches in the country. It would be crazy for me to watch a sample size more than a decade long and then change my entire opinion 2 months into a season where he's caught with seven freshmen, right? But at UCLA, this is not the place that they have patience for this kind of stuff. I mean, you realize Steve Alford was in the Sweet 16 in March 2017 and fired 13 games into the 2018-19 season.
Yes.
2 years after that, less than 2 years after that, he's gone.
Yeah, I know. Right? Yeah, I agree. I'd split it this way. This would be the first time Cronin doesn't make the tournament. That was the second time Alford missed it. So I don't think there's any chance that Cronin gets fired. I don't think he's going there either, but I just want to be clear on this. I think UCLA could lose another 20 games the rest of the season or how many are left, and I still don't think he'd be fired.
I agree with you. I don't think he's in trouble of getting fired this year, but you keep this going the way it's going, you come back next year and miss the tournament again, that really might be it. And the problem he runs into now is that, because we talked about this a few weeks ago, if you're Louisville, you're looking for a coach, why wouldn't you at least kick the tires on Mick Cronin? And I still would. Even if this season was bad.
This kind of stuff just is not.
But this kind of stuff makes it harder to do.
Way harder, man.
Way harder. And so you might be, you know, when you start saying stuff publicly like, hey, I'd like to have better players, but we don't have NIL money at UCLA, that probably doesn't play well with everybody at UCLA, right? So you probably are alienating yourself from some people at your current place and also causing problems with possible future employers. Because it's like, oh, well, you know, yeah, the guy's, he's done a lot of good stuff, but now he's just showing up at press conferences, pointing fingers at everybody other than himself. And then he's skipping press conferences. And are we sure we want to get into business with this guy? I'm just saying this has not been a good 2 months for wherever Mick's career is going. And I guess I just say this. I get how frustrating it must be to get into a profession under certain pretenses and then watch it just flip so dramatically. The way that being a college basketball coach and college football coach has flipped in the past few years. Name, image, and likeness rights, transfer portal, one-time transfer waiver. The job description is vastly different than it's ever been. And you have to do things that you've never had to do. But that's the point. You have to do things that you've never had to do. So if you don't have NIL money just stacked up like your Texas or Kansas or Arkansas or Alabama or whatever, well, then it's your job to go create the NIL money. If you have dumb players, which is certainly what Mick implied last week, well, it's your job to recruit smarter players. You know, this goes for anything in college athletics. Like, there is no general manager to blame. There is no front office to blame. Like, you are in control. And so I don't think fans have much patience anymore to hear particularly coaches at blue blood programs like UCLA to complain about their roster or complain about their NIL money. Cause I think what most fans would say back is, yo man, you're in charge of the roster. You can raise NIL money. Yeah. I mean, there's probably a smart way for you to even come out of your own pocket. If that's what you need to do, there's ways around everything. But like just losing every game and complaining about it afterwards and pointing fingers everywhere else, that's problematic.
Yeah, we can keep it moving. One note here, because I did fact check myself in real time. I thought Lavin might have only missed one and gotten fired. That is what happened. He was there 7 years. Year seven, they were 10-19. He was out. They had made the tournament every year before. Hadn't made a Final Four like Cronin. Did make an Elite Eight in his first season, four Sweet 16, excuse me, in the preceding five seasons before that. What else from the weekend do we want to touch on
here? So we'll go from Mick Cronin to Mick Cronin's former school, Cincinnati. Maybe one of the more surprising victories of the weekend. One in terms of notable games. Cincinnati wins at BYU. Do you believe the Bearcats are legitimate? Do you think BYU is a classic computer tricker.
I'm not going computer tricker just yet here, although this is another team in that general area. Ski country out west. How about that? Colorado, it was a year ago or 2 years ago. Now you got BYU here. Let's go with Cincy first. 12-2. I did have them making the tournament this year, so you pat your back. I guess I'll pat mine, although we are a ways to go. This was by far the most significant win of Cincinnati's season so far. A lot of road to hoe there. We'll see if they can get it done. Wes Miller, he's in getting his guys eligible because of all the changes that happened back a month ago or so. This is a big one, and there's a few two-loss teams out there that are starting to perk up and make some noise and maybe start having people pay attention. But you do this, and you do it on the road, double-digit win. I thought that was significant. Real quick on BYU, also now 12-2 by virtue of this loss. Is it surprising? Yeah, of course it's surprising, GP. Their numbers have been so good, and the schedule overall, frankly, you could really look at the schedule that BYU played and say it wasn't even as good as Houston's, in my opinion. So we'll see moving forward. If I had to, you're not asking me this, but if you had me pick, BYU's next 2 months or Cincinnati's, who would I buy more? I would buy BYU more to this point, but that's a big time W. And we may well come to learn that Cincinnati winning at BYU, it will get other big wins in the Big 12, but maybe that was the one that really turned the season and will be the clincher between them getting in or going to the NIT.
Yeah, Cincinnati doesn't have big wins other than this one, but the losses are at Xavier and to Dayton in Cincinnati, but not at Fifth Third. So technically neutral.
Yeah.
They've only played three games in the first two quadrants. Three. But they are 1-2 in those games. And they don't have any other losses anywhere else. I moved them into the top 25 and one. I got Cincinnati 24, BYU 25, and now Wake Forest 26. First team out, Texas Tech. I got my eyes on them. Huh. But BYU, in terms of computer trickers, currently fourth in the net, ninth at KenPom, eighth at Bart Torvik. But they're just 2-2 in the first two quadrants. Only got one quad one win. That's a victory over San Diego State nearly 2 months ago, and now you lose a home game to Cincinnati, and up next for them is at Baylor. You know what that means?
Tell me.
Oh, it's my favorite saying.
Okay.
You can't lose a game.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
You can't lose a game you're supposed to win right before you have to play a game you're supposed to lose. That's how you get a losing streak. That's how you get a losing streak.
Reliable chestnut there. That's right. That's right. Do you consider, how about this though? I feel like calling a two-game losing streak isn't a streak. That feels too aggressive. I feel like it's got to be three in a row.
Either okay, way, well, let's name it. What is it? What are two losses in a row?
Give it. You know what? To me, that's a skid.
That's a losing skid.
Yeah, give it a skid. This is officially to all sports media out there. Two in a row. That's a skid. Three plus, then you're on an official streak.
Okay. Now let's make a promise to each other.
Okay.
Every time we write, every time we talk.
Every time. Yes.
Every time without exception.
You want to cut our palms right now, make this a blood oath?
Let's do it. Let's be blood brothers.
Okay.
Do you ever trade blood with somebody when you were a kid? Of course,
was I born in 1747? Of course not. Like, what kind of question is that?
I feel like I used to trade blood with people.
Yeah.
I feel like that was a thing. Like you cut yourself and you trade blood with people. And that's how I got HIV.
All right. No, I didn't.
But I feel like I'm blood brothers with people. I don't remember who, but I feel like I've done that.
I'm not going to be one of them. However, I will agree. I will do a proverbial handshake with you. Palms clean, and we can.
No, I'm bringing razors to the Final Four.
It's packed. No, stop.
I'm bringing razors to the Final Four. On the
plane. Good luck. Yeah. Okay. And breaking the chair.
I've tried to bring razors to the Final Four so we can be blood brothers, and I get arrested by TSA.
Exactly. You didn't quite think this through.
Wouldn't that be a good story?
Shocking news. Breaking news. The guy who proclaims to be an expert in all things of among the many things?
I'm an expert in extortion.
Extortion. There we go. Yeah, extortion.
I'm a doctor.
I haven't thought this all the way through here.
I'm a doctor, and I'm an expert on extortion. And I rank 26 basketball teams every morning. I don't know if you heard about that.
No. Cincinnati. It's a
two-game losing skid, three-game losing streak. We just determined that's the way it's going to be going forward. Check the top 25 and one every morning. If somebody loses two games in a row, I'm going to call it a skid. And I don't think I've ever called it a skid before, but I'm going to do it. Skid.
I love it.
Okay. I'm going to do it. That's because we're bud brothers.
What else we got?
SEC. when we started this season, seemed like the most wide open power conference in the country, perhaps. Now, would you agree? It feels like maybe it's Tennessee, Kentucky, Auburn, and then a little bit of a gap.
It certainly seems that way. Not much to say about Tennessee. Like, congrats to Tennessee, but the result, I guess, wasn't that surprising. And to be clear, we are one game into SEC play. But having to see what these teams have accomplished, metrics would say Bama, but it just hasn't gotten the wins.
They're 0-5 in quadrant one and six in the net.
I know. Well, maybe you should be taking your computer trick or compass and pointing it to a different part of the country. I don't know.
Tuscaloosa.
There you go. That might be
a lot of computer. You got an Alabama potential computer tricker, a BYU potential computer tricker. Maybe an Iowa State computer tricker situation.
This is the podcast that shouts out the greatest player in the history of South Carolina basketball. I will at least mention the Gamecocks at 13-1.
Yeah.
However, we just got to see a little bit more here, and you got a couple of roadies upcoming. If you peel off at least one victory there, we'll give a little more time. They're not at the table just yet. Auburn. Let's just sit on this real quick. Walking into Bud Walton.
My God.
Place where I saw Arkansas shorthanded be able to take down Duke earlier this season and simply lay the largest of eggs. I mean, 83-51. 83-51 Arkansas. What are we doing here?
You were in that building less than 2 months ago. How does anybody beat that team in that building by that much?
Come on, man. I am going to give credit to Auburn for going in and winning like that. And it is deservingly at the table to be an SEC champion. Auburn, I sold on them going into the season relative to where they were in the preseason. I was wrong on that. Arkansas, I sold on relative to where they were. And I have been right about that. The result to me is more about Arkansas and what we'll see what Musk can do to try and maybe get this thing turned around. But this is a 9-5 team right now, and the Duke win is the only thing it can hang its hat on. A home loss to UNCG is already out there. Lost a competitive game to Memphis in the Bahamas. UNC ran away from it, and then it tried to keep pace but couldn't with an Oklahoma team that looks pretty good there. Now you're staring down two roadies against a Georgia team. Oh, by the way, as we talk the SEC here, Georgia's at 11-3 and has won 9 in a row. So interesting times in the SEC. I'm not willing to say that it's just a three-team race just yet, but those are the three clearly most likely candidates. Them and obviously Kentucky got a competitive, really nice win. That's kind of win if you're a Kentucky fan, GP, where it's just like, all right, these kind of games, seeing them pull these wins out, is giving me hope if you are a Kentucky fan and saying we go on the road, Florida looks like a decent team, we get this win, start off SEC play, you're seeing the evidence pile up here that this should be a quality season for the Wildcats.
For what it's worth, KenPom is currently projecting SEC co-champions. Have you looked at it?
I have not.
Who do you think they have?
I would say it's Tennessee, Kentucky, but that seems almost like too obvious of an answer. It's
Tennessee, Auburn.
Okay.
It's BP's current school and BP's former school.
There you go. How about
projected to be co-champs in the SEC at 14-4. KenPom currently projects Kentucky two games back of that.
Do you know when they play, and do they play twice? Auburn and Tennessee. Do you have that up by chance?
I don't have it up, but I can find it.
I got you right now. I got you right now. They only play once. Auburn goes to play at Tennessee end of February there. So only once. Auburn's next opponent is A&M, and they're getting a mention here because that is a yikesy. You're losing at home to LSU. That was a misfire on my behalf. I thought A&M would. I picked them to win the SEC. I'm not going to be right on that. Buzz Williams' team too experienced to be this inconsistent at this point. Obviously, credit to Matt McMahon and LSU being able to do that, but can't be dropping games against LSU and considering yourself a surefire NCAA tournament team. Aggies have work to do.
It's just I don't know. Funny how this stuff works. Texas A&M last season goes 15-3 in the SEC, and they bring back most of the good pieces from that team. And now they're 9-5 and 0-1 in the SEC with a home loss to LSU.
Yeah, well, it's hard to do this year over year. It really is.
Well, like the same thing at Marquette.
Same thing at FAU. We can talk about all these teams.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
It is. And coaches say this, and I feel like they try and just get us into our stupid media heads that just listen. It's not the same thing year after year. If we bring back a lot of guys, it's not easy to do. And they are right. And these are three teams that are clear evidence of that.
Well, I had a coach tell me this one time. We got into a conversation and it was the same type of thing. Like I'm sitting there going like, North Carolina last year.
Yeah.
Great example. And I heard the coach said this, and I've heard other coaches say it. The thought was, and he wasn't talking down. He was just sort of like being, I actually appreciate it when coaches listen to the podcast and then they reach out and they go, "Hey, I want to talk to you about something." Or and sometimes it's even like, I got a text from a coach one time. He's like, "Hey, I didn't hear it, but I heard you said, somebody told me you said this and wanted to go, you know, you got 10 minutes. Let's talk about it." I like that. Mm-hmm. And so what one coach, we were having this conversation, he said, the mistake people make is you go, "This team was good. They're bringing everybody back. It's the same team, but it's never the same team. You've got different personalities. You've got different desires. Mm-hmm. You've got different levels of development throughout the offseason. Sometimes the pecking order of things changes. It's just stop." And I had a coach said this to me. He said, "Stop saying they're bringing back their whole team. They're bringing back basically the same team." Because you don't have any idea what they're bringing back. They are bringing back basically the same players, at least the same names and the same jersey numbers, but you don't know what's been going on. And something that was good can be bad, and something that was bad can be good. And Texas A&M, it's early. Keep in mind, they started bad last year too.
They did.
But I don't know. I just sort of, that's something I try to remind myself of. And maybe I need to. Maybe I'm the person that needs to be reminded of this most after North Carolina last year and Florida Atlantic this year. Like, just because all these dudes are back from a good team doesn't mean they're going to be a good team again. And there's a lot of examples of that throughout the sport.
As we do this right now, live here, I mean, right now, Northwestern just hit a triple. It's 64-47. Now, Northwestern's at home, and it's a 10-3 team before this game goes final. But that they're beating Michigan State 64-47, excuse me. And that's a Michigan State team that was also picked preseason top five. So,
dude, you have no... It's becoming difficult to find 26 teams to put in the top 25 and one.
Well, dude, would you agree on this? And we're veering a little bit, but we can have this quick discussion because I think I had this as an email mailbag question in the court report last week. To me, this year, the top 20-ish teams at the top, I feel like it's weirdly enough, because we're still in a COVID year, it shouldn't be this. And maybe this will prove to be incorrect 6 weeks from now when we look up. But I feel like the top 20, I'm not talking the top three, the top five, who are the elite teams? I'm talking the teams that are in contention or should be in contention to get a 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 next to their name in the big dance. I feel like for whatever reason, that's just a little bit lower this year across the board. Like if you're grading it out last year, year before, really 2020 year as well. I could be wrong on that, but it's just a general vibe. Maybe it's because we're getting these random losses. And you're seeing like, and again, I'm saying this in real time here, so this is going to go out to traditional podcast channels overnight and into your phones on Monday when you're listening. But like, I've been watching this game with the side eye here, and like, Michigan State's getting run, dude. Like, it's almost a 20 point, and this is a team that's been up and down all season. But to your point, I guess, you know, I would you agree? Top 20 teams, they just feel like a tick down from what we've seen in recent years.
Yes, and I think I'm just telling you when I, you know, I wake up. And I start and I go, okay, I got to get this team out. I've got to get Florida Atlantic out. I decided to get James Madison out. You got to definitely get Texas A&M out. There was another one I had to push. I had to push out four teams this morning. And then I start looking for four teams. And it's like, really? I guess congratulations, Wake Forest. You know, like I have noticed the top does it. Like Purdue is excellent. And we should know Purdue handled Illinois. Illinois covered that number on Friday night, but Purdue was up big.
Yeah, I actually caught most of that game. And Illinois kind of chased at the end. But that was, if you watch the game, it was right. One of those where it's like you never thought Illinois was actually going to come close.
No, Illinois was down double digits the entire second half until there were like 3 minutes left in the game, 4 minutes left in the game. So if all you did was go to bed on Friday night, wake up Saturday morning and look at the box score, you'd be like, ooh, Illinois played them tight. They mm-hmm. didn't. They made the score close at the end, but that was not a competitive game. So I think Purdue is excellent. I think Houston's excellent. We just, you know, we need to see it against, you know, elite competition. And we will. They play in the Big 12. There's no way not to play elite competition. But yeah, the rest of the top 10 after that, I mean, I've got Kansas in the top three, and they seem very vulnerable. You know, and then once you get to the 20s, I've just been rotating teams out of there. It feels like for three straight weeks now. So yeah, I think I don't even know how to quantify this, but it feels like the level of basketball being played at the top of the sport, to your point, is a little down relative to where it normally is. And I didn't have any idea we were going to talk about this, and I might not even be right. I'm just sort of thinking through it. I wonder how much of that, if any of it, is just the roster overhauls. It's just so many people playing with new people every single year.
Could be that, although Marquette doesn't have that.
That's right.
So you don't have that Marquette. You don't have it with
FAU.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
That's the case. Duke, to a certain extent as well. Shire got into that whole conversation with me when I talked to him for the Arkansas game, where he was basically laying out, like, here's what it was like when I was a player, and when you go from freshman to sophomore and how big of a jump that actually is, and your roles in this team, and like, we're going to be asking guys in roles to do things that they weren't doing a year ago. And a lot of those teams actually didn't use the portal. So it is a bit ironic. Hell, maybe I'll even include this in the court report there, because there's something there. But that, with even saying that, like, yes, Marquette is now 2-2 in the Big East. I'll mention the Big East here in a second. We're not going to overreact here in the first week of January and kind of get into how worried are we about this team? We could well look at Marquette, 10, 20, 10, 15 games down the road, and they're doing just fine and they're top two in the Big East. But it is at least notable that they are now just one loss away from matching their loss total in all of regular season play last season in the Big East.
Since we already mentioned them, let me put because I see you in the chat. With FAU, like, I moved them out of the top 25 and one. I felt like I had to. They're still 5-2 in the first two quadrants. That's not just, trust me, as somebody who looks at this stuff every morning, that's not bad.
Okay, what do we got out that? What's the other records outside of it?
Well, they're 3-2 in quadrant four. That's the problem. That's like, the loss to Charlotte sounds bad, and it is bad, but it's only a quad two loss.
Oh, that was my question. Yeah. Was it quad two or quad three?
It's a quad two loss, because Charlotte is 105 in the net. And when you're on the road, you go all the way up to 135, still falls in quad two. So that felt like, because I saw a lot of people lumping it together. Like, here comes FAU taking another horrific loss. It was a bad loss, but it ain't as horrific as the other two they got. They've got two quad fours. They're the only team in the country with two quad fours and two quad ones. And now they got a quad two to go with it. I've got them out of the top 25 and one. And I'm not saying they can't get back in there, but the problem with playing in the American Athletic Conference, this version of it, is that you don't have places to make up for bad losses. Like, Marquette just lost at Seton Hall, right? Well, they got plenty of time and places to offset that with big wins in the Big East. And that's why if you take let's pretend that BYU is actually a top 10 team in the country, and that's what they'll prove to be. Well, then you can lose at home to Cincinnati. You got a million opportunities to make up for it. And if you're legitimately good, you will. But when you are FAU or Memphis, you do all this work in your non-league to set yourself up. I mean, the AAC had two top 20 teams heading into conference, and then one of them loses a starter for the season to a knee injury. That's Memphis and Caleb Mills. And the other one, can't stop taking bad losses, and you don't have places to make up for them. And that's how you end up in that 8-9 game again or something like that. And so it's just, this isn't expert analysis, but, if you're trying to get a seed in the NCAA tournament that's going to set you up for success, as opposed to, you're hoping Fairleigh Dickinson upsets the number one seed and you get to play them. Well, then you can't keep taking losses like this, because their quad one number of wins is going to be low, even if they were excellent all season long. They only gonna have so many opportunities. That's why you can't damage quad four, quad three, quad two, and they got bad stuff in quad four and now something bad in quad two too.
All right, let me just drop a few on here. You tell me, you react to whatever you want to. But this is my scene. I didn't see a lot of these games, but this is me looking at the results from across the weekend and kind of the bigger picture stuff. Let's go to the Big East here first. So St. John's goes in, wins at Villanova in the Fin for the first time since the Jurassic era. Johnny's now 11-4. Nova is now 10-5. Seton Hall has now beat Marquette, UConn, and Providence in early season play. So we are still early, but what's fascinating is, like, the Nova loss, you're kind of like, can you try and get it together here? Yet, here are the Big East standings right now. Four teams are sitting at 3-1. It's UConn, it's Nova, it's St. John's, and it's Seton Hall. And then you've got Marquette and Creighton, the two of the three preseason favorites. They're both at 2-2. Providence, which is been an upstart and been good, but sitting there at 2-2. And then Xavier and Georgetown and DePaul, they have two wins combined between them all. Butler was expected to be in that spot, but it was off to a hot start. Now Butler, unfortunately, couldn't get it done Friday night at home against UConn, and it's now 0-3. They're going to have to rally there. Big East to me, GP, is just fascinating all around, and the results there, they seem to be a little bit at odds with the reality of the overall standings.
Yeah, like it's one of the more interesting leagues right now because yeah. I just assume Marquette is going to flip it at some point and be reliably good, but they're going to have to go. I think this is right. Let me make sure I've got it right. 15-1. The rest of the way to match last season's Big East record. Yeah,
that's correct.
And they still got tough games on that schedule. That's not happening. But I still think they'll be good. UConn, I have no concerns with. They're going to be fine. I have no concerns with UConn. Villanova's all over the place. Villanova could win. Yeah. Villanova could finish seventh in the Big East and then win the Big East tournament, or win the Big East and then lose to DePaul. In the tournament. I mean, who knows?
Nova and FAU. These are the teams with the wackiest resumes out there. I'm here for it, man.
Creighton. I don't know. I'll take a wait and see, a little more of a wait and see approach with them. Not whether they're going to be good, NCAA tournament good, all that stuff, but whether they're going to be great like we thought they'd be great. Providence, I just think the loss of Bryce Hopkins catches up with them at some point.
You know what? Good point. Yes, yes.
I think that is
a major, 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 major ding on them, and we will see if they can overcome it. But if they don't, it will truly be at no fault of their own because Hopkins was one of the most valuable players in the country.
Seton Hall, I think they're going to be one of those teams that they can beat anybody at home, and then they'll see. You know, we'll see what they are on the road.
3-1 GP. I mean, that is a big start. And if a Villanova doesn't get in, maybe Seton Hall is the team that replaces him. We'll wait and see.
Yeah, I think Seton Hall is going to be a nightmare. Not a nightmare. I don't want to overstate it, but they're going to be a problem for everybody in the Prudential Center, and they'll catch some people on the road too. If I were at Seton Hall, I'd be saying, let's try to win every home game and win the ones on the road we're supposed to win, and that should be good enough.
Okay.
All right. Let's win our home games and win the ones we're supposed to win on the road, and that'll be good enough. We don't need to go to UConn and win. We don't need to go to, I mean, you get the point.
Yeah.
St. John's is to me like, okay, it's Rick Pitino and he's tied for first.
In there.
I mean, we're only 20% through the conference schedule, but we are 20% through the conference schedule, and Rick Pitino's tied for first.
Yes.
I love this league. I think it's one of the more enjoyable leagues to just watch.
I agree. We said in the preseason, it's been this way for a while. It continues to be that way. Okay. Quick bing, bang, boom here. And then you wrap it up however you want. Here's what stood out to me in terms of league standings. Oh, by the way, Pac-12 right now, Oregon and Arizona State lead at 4-0 apiece. I mean,
and Arizona's going to win that league by 3 games.
Right now it is Oregon and ASU, which is not even a top 100 KenPom team right now. By the way, Colorado went 0-2 on its Arizona swing. Not going to overreact to that just yet, but 0-2, you thought maybe they could have maybe picked one off. That didn't happen. Virginia losing by 16 is an absolute siren alert. They were played at NC State, 16-point loss. We'll see if Tony Bennett can fix things, but that is an eye-opener. I want to circle back on Wake real quick. Peeled off 9 straight wins. Got an 86-82 OT win over Miami. Steve Forbes' team has come close the past two seasons to make the NCAA tournament, but missed out. It seems like it's setting up for this to be the year for the Deacs to break through. Let's just see how the next couple weeks go, but I like the signs I'm seeing there. I saw the chat earlier mention this game, this outcome, and you told me that that you have them as your first team out. Texas Tech winning in Austin, so Red Raiders, I think, are team 27 for you right now, GP. They won 78-67. Texas Tech is 12-2, but that was its first notable win, so we will see if it's on its way. We have a lot of intriguing teams right now that only have 2 or 3 losses at this point, but if you dig into the resumes, there's a lot of work to be done. Right. So some of these teams will wind up emerging, and they'll emerge to the point where I think they'll get single digit seeds, but a couple of them, I think it's inevitable. It'll just break this way. They'll kind of fade and we'll look up and they'll be well on their way in the NIT. With Texas Tech, I just simply don't know, but it's obviously a notable one. Texas is 11-3 and does not have a notable win yet. Also, reminder, it only beat Louisville by 1. I was at that game in the Garden there. Keep an eye on the Longhorns. Nearly got to the Final Four last year. 2 seed. Rodney Terry did a great job. You and I agreed he had done enough to earn getting the job, and we like the Texas future under him. However, to this point, haven't quite seen it yet. You know, they're a little bit of a pretender. We'll see. And then 2 more. Carolina wins at Clemson. Similar to Kentucky, Carolina is just, you're getting enough there to give you real hope that, you know, we have the evidence here that, okay, maybe we're not a top 5 team. Who sees it? Who knows if we'll be a top 10 team, but now won four straight 3-0 in league play. Meantime, Clemson is 11-3, lost 3 of 5, and all those three of those games were to high majors. The two wins came to mid-major teams. And then my last one, I'm going to absolutely shout out Utah State here. Held at home to beat Colorado State by 5. Utah State in its first season under Danny Sprinkle is 14-1. We obviously previously recently talked about the Mountain West and its legitimacy. I told you it's basically a lock to get at least 4 bids. It's because of results like this, like Utah State getting that quad one win on its home floor is going to push them to vie to get into the tournament. They're well on their way at this point. That was an important result for the Mountain West over the weekend.
Just bouncing around, reacting to what you said. Texas Tech, assuming Michigan State, update me on that Michigan State score. And I hate doing that in a podcast.
So I'm hold on. I got you right now. I think it's just coming back. Hold on. It's literally just coming back from commercial as we are doing this. So keep going and I will give it to you once it flashes.
I got it right here. So Northwestern 66, Michigan State 55, 7:51 left. The point I'm trying to make is if Michigan State loses, I got to get them out of the top 25-1 and I will replace them with Texas Tech.
Not Utah State.
Baby, where you been? Utah State's 18th.
Okay, there we go. Okay, all right.
You ready for this? Mountain West, updated top 25-1?
Yes.
San Diego State, 17th. Utah State, 18th. Colorado State, 19th. Nevada, 21.
Yeah, and New Mexico's not that far behind either. They got a big one coming later this weekend. San Diego State on CBS, but that'll be a Friday episode.
On Wake. 9 straight wins. I moved them in. And you're right. Like we always talk about, man, Eric Musselman. Nobody does the portal like Eric Musselman. You know who does the portal pretty good?
Forbes.
Steve Forbes. Top 2 scores right now are from the portal. Hunter Salas out of Gonzaga and then Kevin Miller out of Central Michigan. And like before that, he had Jake LaRavia, who becomes a first-round draft pick. Yeah. I wish he would have never been a first-round draft pick. Okay. Oh, God, that's terrible.
Okay. Just keep going, please.
But I mean, I feel like I'm doing.
We don't need to bury Jake LaRavia as you're trying to make a point about Forbes' work in the portal.
That's right. You're right. That's my colleague, by the way.
Yeah.
We both get direct deposits from the same place.
Okay.
But if you want to know the truth, I think I'm doing more for the Grizzlies right now than Jake LaRavia.
Let's keep it moving, please.
Okay. So anyway, shouts to Forbes, and we talked about it before. He had just a nightmare of an offseason. His wife Janetta, and it's very publicly. I'm not telling secrets. She suffered a stroke. She's doing better. Like it really encouraging signs, but it's just, I would hate just on a personal level for Forbes to be dealing with that in his personal life and then struggling in his professional life as well. I know one has nothing to do with the other and basketball wins don't help you when you walk in the front door and your wife is still struggling to get back to where she was. But like it, I bet it's better than the alternative. I bet it's better than the alternative. So I'm really happy for Steve and his family and everybody at Wake Forest. And then the other point you made that I wanted to touch on, because it's true. There are a lot of teams that built up great records, power conference teams, South Carolina, Cincinnati. And you look at them and you go, okay, great record, but you ain't beat nobody. All right, great record, but you ain't done nothing. And then they actually beat somebody and you're like, all right, what do I do with these guys now? Texas Tech.
Yep.
So I looked at South Carolina and then I just decided against it. But a win at home over Mississippi State made me at least look at you. And there were a handful of those this weekend that emerged. Like, okay, we're 2 months into this thing. You've got a nice record. You ain't really beat anybody. Okay, Cincinnati, go to BYU and win. Okay, Texas Tech, go to Austin and win. Okay, South Carolina, knock off a Mississippi State team. There was just a lot of that this weekend or some of that this weekend that was notable.
All right, good deal. You got anything else, bud?
Well, just looking ahead to the next couple of nights, there's nothing from a college basketball perspective interesting on Monday night. No top 25 teams are scheduled to play, which means none are going to play. I don't know why I said it that way. It's not like no one would be scheduled to play right now.
And then we're not going to scramble down to the local blacktop and get it going. That's not
it. It would be like, oh no, on Sunday night I said none of them were playing, and then on Monday morning they decided to schedule a game. No top 25 teams are playing Monday night, at least no current top 25 teams. We do have the college football playoff.
Let's pick it.
It's Washington and Michigan.
Monday.
Game one. Monday.
What's the line? Can I guess? I'll say Michigan's got to be favored, obviously. I'll say that is Michigan -3.5.
It's 4.5.
Four and a half.
Do you want to add it to the Final Four in one tally?
I think we have done this almost every year. So this is an unofficial final. It's an official Final Four one tally. Nada added to the board here. I did, by the way, did you mention on the show or not? I sent Nada. He texted.
Oh, this is how I see what's going on.
He texted me your picks, your game picks. And so literally I'm in the gondola on Killington going up, and I sent him back all the stuff. I sent it from the gondola.
Well, how'd you go this week?
Nada's got it here. Actually, let me bring it up real quick. I don't know who covered or not. Hold on. Where is my Nada? I'm bringing it up. Here we go. I picked Purdue.
That's a loss.
That's a loss. I picked Kentucky minus one. That's a win.
That's a win.
Okay. I picked Kansas minus seven. That's a loss.
Yeah, 1-2.
Why did I pick Mississippi to cover? That's a terrible loss.
Yeah, I did that too. It was a terrible loss.
1-3. And then I took Clemson minus. You know what? These picks don't count.
These picks. Well, 1-4. I went 2-3.
Gondola ride doesn't count. It wasn't on that gondola ride, but I had some very kind college student offer me a gummy on the gondola. I turned it down.
10 milligrams or 25? Because you got to know. You got to know. If you don't know the difference between 10 and a 25, boy, you messing around too much.
He was first. That really might not be safe. Although to be fair, this chap, it was like the second to last ride of the day. So he might've just been trying to get it going there. Turned it down. My point is this: gondola ride picks should not count, but I'll wear it all the same.
Okay. You're 1-4. I'm 2-3. I had a 1-game lead. That means I have a 2-game lead. That means no matter what happens in this national championship game on Monday night, I will walk into Friday's Final Four and 1 still with an insurmountable lead.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Do you want to pick or do you want me to pick first?
I want to pick first because I want to be.
I already got my pick. So I will not change.
Okay. I'm Washington. Thanks. Straight up. Washington 27, Michigan 24. That's your final score. Take the Huskies and the under.
What the hell? I'll take Washington straight up as well, but we'll take them against the spread for these purposes. And what the hell? Why not? 31. Make it weird. I'll say 26-20 Wazoo. Not Wazoo. Washington. Wazoo is not in this game.
And it's wild. Did you hear what Jim Harbaugh is going to do?
I assume this is a bit, so go ahead, lay it on me.
He's going to let Phil Martelli coach the game.
Oh my gosh. We're running long. Do we need to get into this?
I don't care. Here's my official, because I saw some people, everybody's got opinions on it. Here's my opinion on on Juwan Howard letting Phil Martelli coach back in Philadelphia today. I don't care.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it is weird. And if I were a Michigan fan, I would be going, why does our coach seem more interested in fist fighting people than coaching basketball games? That's what I would want to know if I were a Michigan fan.
I did see that and I was like, all right. And obviously he was in Philadelphia. So
it's just like, imagine, I don't know.
What if we see Martelli on the sideline tomorrow night at the national championship?
Coaching with a headset on. And Juwan Howard and Jim Harbaugh are just sitting behind him.
Or it's even like it's a flash to the box, like one of the coordinators, and right next to him is Martelli with that set on up in the suite there.
But I just think of a random right now, top of your head.
Yeah.
Think of a random SEC school.
Okay, I got it. You want me to say it out loud?
Name one assistant coach from that school.
Tennessee, Jordan Ganey.
Okay, wherever Jordan Ganey lives, just imagine Tennessee was playing a game there, and Rick Barnes was just like, hey, I ain't coaching tonight because we're in Jordan's hometown. That's bananas.
Yeah. I think I said Jordan. I meant Justin Ganey. My apologies. Justin, right. But yes.
Yeah. Okay. Just the same thing, right? It's just like, what? What are we doing?
I know.
Like, there's a reason you've never heard of this happening before because it's strange.
It is strange.
So anyway, I don't care, but it is strange. But I do look forward. I think Phil Martelli could coach football.
He probably could.
Remember when Tom Izzo was thinking about coaching football?
I don't. I remember when he put his guys in football gear. I remember that.
This was a real thing. He was thinking about maybe becoming a football coach after he already had a Hall of Fame basketball career. Okay. And I wrote a column about it. I mean, I'm just at CBS. I mean, I've been there, I don't know, a year or two.
This is 07. We're thinking this is 07.
I don't remember. I just remember there was like a legitimate report. Tom Izzo was maybe thinking about coaching Michigan State football or something. And I wrote a column. I didn't really know Tom that much back then. And I wrote a column basically saying, like, just because he was friends with the old 49ers coach
Yeah. Come on, man. Mariucci.
Steve Mariucci, right.
Been like friends since they were like 10 or whatever.
So is the classic young guy writing a column, like, just because you're friends with a football coach doesn't mean you can coach football. Like, what are we doing? And so something happened and my phone rings and it's Tom. And I'm like, oh God, here we go. So I go, all right, well, I guess I know what this, I don't remember the context, but I just, hello. And the first words out of his mouth, keep in mind, we barely know each other. All right. First words out of his mouth. You really think I couldn't coach MF in football? I was like, excuse me. And he starts laughing. he had fun with it, but I was like terrified because he sounded mad eventually, or he sounded mad initially. But if Tom Izzo could coach football once upon a time, I don't have any doubt Phil Martelli could as well. And I look forward to that tomorrow night.
Yeah, Northwestern's up by 13 and about Michigan State for the third straight time.
Welcome to the top 25 and one Texas Tech. So we don't have anything on Monday except for football. We both have picked Washington to win outright. Tuesday, pretty great schedule. Run you through some games. Tell me what stands out. Houston is at Iowa State. That is the number one team in the computers against a possible computer tricker. That's going to be difficult, though. I'll be surprised if that's not a tight game. Texas is at Cincinnati. All right, you got one big win. Can you get two? Here's a chance. Purdue is at Pinnacle Bank.
They're going to walk right in.
Probably. BYU is at Baylor. Hey, don't lose one you're supposed to win before you got to play one you're supposed to lose. That's how you get a losing skid.
That's a skid. That could be a skid right there.
Could be a BYU skid on the way. Colorado State is at Boise State.
That is just, here we go. Colorado State. Although they were, that's not the same situation as BYU. Continue. That's a tasty Mountain West affair.
Duke is at Lil Bub.
Lil Bub.
They got to go to Pitt and deal with Lil Bub. Good luck with that.
That's the Matt Plisga special. He's the SID at Pitt, former SID at Duke. So,
yeah. Texas A&M is at Auburn.
Man, we are loaded up on Tuesday.
And then on CBS Sports Network, we'll have a triple header. We're going to open with Inside College Basketball at 6:30 Eastern. 7 o'clock Eastern, Toledo at Kent State. 9 o'clock Eastern, Creighton at DePaul. 11 Eastern, it's my San Diego State Aztecs at San Jose State. So it looks like somebody's staying up to about 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, maybe 4 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday. You want to see some bloodshot eyes on a Wednesday morning podcast? Baby, be here at the start.
And this is an opportunity for a programming note. This is why once we hit this point in the season, we have been trying to give you these 9 a.m. podcasts as frequently as we can. But when GP is in studio late the night before, we're going to do 10 a.m. starts on YouTube for our live audience. The chat's been nice. Plus, we appreciate that as well. But our Wednesday morning shows, when Paris is in studio late, we will start at 10 a.m. now instead of 9 a.m. That's a really good Tuesday slate. We'll have no shortage of things to talk about and react to. Let's predict right now. What game will we be reacting to? What will lead the Wednesday show? My guess is, I'm going to say, man, there's a lot of options here. Why the hell not? Pitt takes out Duke, and we leave with a Duke loss on Wednesday.
Lil Bub?
Lil Bub gets it done. Keep in mind, Pitt is 10-5. Does Pitt have a top 100? If Pitt doesn't have a top 100 win, I'm walking that back immediately. I will say...
Oh, you're going to regret this.
Am I?
You're going to regret walking it back.
I am walking it back. They haven't. Not that they can't. They haven't beaten a top 100 opponent yet. I got to see it happen once. I can't just walk in and just declare that. I feel like a BYU loss at Baylor, if it happens, that's not leading the show.
No. Here's what it will be. You ready for this?
Yeah.
It'll either be Houston losing at Iowa State, which I'm not predicting, but it's certainly in the cards. Or it will be Purdue losing at Pinnacle Bank, or it will be Duke losing at Pitt. One of those teams is going to lose a road game.
And if none of that happens, the next obvious pick is, or the next choice is obvious, I should say.
What do you think it is?
I mean, you should know what it is. It's crystal clear. Phil Martelli coaching Michigan to a national.
Oh my God, that's going to be wild.
That's going to lead the show for that. Yeah.
He deserves that. I mean,
it better be in Houston right now. That's all I'm saying.
He deserves that. He deserves the opportunity. That's what I do not think. Houston, Purdue, and Duke will all come out of that. Okay, one of them is going to lose. Maybe more.
All right, there we go.
All right, I can't wait. I'm fired up now.
Go get some. You know what? You look like you need some sleeping. Frankly, so do I.
man, I got a long way to go before I can get to sleep tonight. Okay. I got to unpack a suitcase, repack a suitcase, figure out how I'm going to get kids to school in the morning with a wife in the bed, and I got to catch a plane. Man, I ain't never needed a nanny more than I do right now. And I don't, that sounded bad. You know what I mean? I just need help. I just need help.
In fact, I think I do.
I think I just need help. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M.F. and Teagle, legend. Shouts to Huck. Don't you ever. Who is this? Who is this?
You said it at the top of the show. It was, I don't know.
Norlander's inability to acknowledge the tribal chief is shameful.
Tribal chief. I knew it was some sort of name that I was like, is it a non-PC name? Like, I can't even remember what this guy's called.
This is Roman Reigns. He's your universal champion.
The name Roman Reigns. So his real name is Roman Reigns and his stage name.
His real name is Roman Reigns.
I think
his real name is like Jay-Z or something. So
it's not Jay-Z.
What if his real name was Jay-Z, but he changed it to Roman Reigns? Okay. Well, wouldn't that be something? You call him Roman Reigns or the tribal chief or the head of the table, but you must acknowledge him.
He's got to narrow this down. It's got to be just go with one.
Put your one up. I don't know why he doesn't just have a one up here. That doesn't work. That's a goofy way to design a Roman Reigns. Shouts to Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
He's a great champion. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple and Spotify. There's more of us than there are of them. One of us.
Someone in the chat is saying BYU at Baylor is a battle of the thems.
Oh, my God. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. Buddy, that's going to be, they're going to be some.
Yeah. Let's wrap this show up.
Yeah, we better go before we say something ridiculous.
All right.
We'll see you later. Bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.